Namaste and in Lakech. Hi, I'm Zen Benefiel, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. And this week's guest is Jackie Woodside. She is a very interesting, conscious human being. She graduated from Boston College with a master's in social work and clinical social work. She is a seminar leader and an independent contractor, a four-time best-selling author, and host of a podcast called Conscious Living. She's a TEDx speaker. She's executive contributor to Biz Catalyst, which is how we met through the Biz Catalyst 360 network. And she's also a featured contributor for Brains Magazine and Biz Catalyst 360. Jackie, welcome.
Yeah, so good to be here with you. It's, we've been back and forth for so long. It's great to really have some time and space to just connect and collaborate. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. As you know, we kind of dive into the rabbit hole of self-awareness and development and connecting with that inner resource that we all have that we often ignore. How did this first begin with you? Did you have some things happen when you were younger that kind of gave you an indication that there was more to life than what we were able to see?
Yeah, great question. You know, I've always had a really deep spiritual connection in my life. My mom was widowed when I was 2 years old and, you know, left with three kids and a high school education. So my dad's dad also died in that same time frame, and my dad's brother also died, three separate car accidents in 9 months. Still kind of a family legacy in the small town where I came from.
You're three for three, huh?
Yeah. My grandmother lost two sons and her husband in 9 months.
That's got to be a horrible experience to have to go through.
And she was extraordinarily loving and open-hearted and generous and graceful. Her name was Grace. Just such a
fitting, right?
Yeah, expository of who she was, an exposition of who she was. So I don't know if that led it or if I was just kind of born this way, but very early on in my life, I prayed. I asked, where is God? Where do we see God? I've kind of always had this heightened degree of spiritual awareness. I was raised Catholic, and I was the first youth member on the bishop's council for the diocese that I lived in. I was the only teenager on the council. I wrote articles for the bishop's magazine. So, and then all through, I went to a conservative evangelical Christian college where I came out as a lesbian and almost got thrown out. That was an interesting experience.
Right.
Yeah.
What happened to diversity and inclusion in there, right?
I'm not at an evangelical college. So went through a dark night of the soul around that whole experience. And then I found the unity and new thought spiritual movement, which is just such an extraordinarily beautiful interpretation of Christian and spiritual living and thinking.
Indeed it is.
Yeah. So the unity movement really was kind of my rebirth, resurrection, if you will, in my spiritual walk and my very deep and profound connection with the spiritual world and God.
Speaking of deep and profound, did you recognize that maybe that deep, profound connection also happened because you had an absence of exterior opportunities in life, people, right, that oftentimes would have been available for counsel and yet weren't, and that your mother had so many other practical aspects of life that she had to pay attention to that you were kind of left alone. I felt the same thing as a kid. I'd be an orphan and adopted, finding out I was adopted at 4 and a half when they brought my sister home. And then having that deep dive inside is beginning to ask the questions as to why and who are my biologicals. And the question that I came up with that was more profound than anything was, do I have a father and mother in heaven? Can I talk to them?
Beautiful, beautiful.
And yeah. Kid, curious kid, it's like, and lo and behold, guess what? I could, which meant everybody else could too, in my mind.
That's really profound.
Now that doesn't necessarily make it true, that everybody else is actually that aware or can have that kind of communication as you found, and being able to manage that really traumatic, not necessarily traumatic, but excruciatingly fun process of going through college and really being well seated in your understanding. And yet the application of that same value system didn't seem to be present where it ought to have been based on the philosophies, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've come full circle with that whole experience. I admire people who walk their talk and who live their beliefs. So, you know, I don't harbor any, I just feel it's all been part of my journey and my walk.
Well, harboring things is pretty useless anyway, because the only person it affects is you.
Right. So yeah, it's been a beautiful journey. You know, yes, it was definitely a trial by fire. But, you know, I look at one of our spiritual masters and mentors, Jesus, and Jesus did lots of hard things. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's part for those of us that are committed to evolving in our spirituality and our enlightenment and awareness in this human experience. We pretty much want to know that we've signed up to do hard things, to face hard things, to go through hard things, because living unconsciously is really quite easier, quite honestly.
Yeah, you know, but it's kind of blissful when you're unaware.
I don't know about that. I think there's a lot of
Well, it would seem that, you know, it's
easier. That's how I experience.
Yeah.
You know, I was a therapist for 30 years, and a lot of people who ended up in my office were pretty unconscious, and they were anything but blissful. You know, the rise in addictions, the rise in overdoses and suicidality, the rise in depression and anxiety, I think is pointing to the fact that being unconscious is not a path toward wellness, well-being.
Sure. And so the old adage of ignorance is bliss is null and void.
You know, I don't think any longer. I don't think people can afford, given how fast our world is evolving and changing, and the acceleration of evolution of consciousness, the acceleration of just the expansion of the universe itself, which mm-hmm. is an expansion of consciousness. You know, given that we're in that jump time of evolution, I think people who've just, you know, get up, go to work, come home, kick the dog, have a beer, watch TV, go back to bed and do it all over again, I don't think that's working for people any longer. And and that's why I think people like you and the work that you're doing and I'm doing is so important, so that people recognize that there's an alternative, that there is another path, that they do have choices, and that, you know, being educated, empowered, and enlightened, that's the tagline of my podcast, Educate, Empower, and Enlighten.
EQ'd.
EQ'd is an alternative to being unconscious.
Mm. You know, that EQ, just mentioning that, I'm thinking about the notion of the Tesseract and how we will put things out in front of us, or things are put in front of us, and then we kind of envelop them, and then the whole process just happens again. So we're like this Tesseract going through space and time, collecting information and hopefully distilling that into practical applications so that we can increase our happiness quotient, for one.
Yeah. To, you know, to me, it's to raise our consciousness,
mm-hmm.
experience ourselves in the human expression as more loving, more patient, more accepting, more peaceful, you know, to have the experience of heaven on earth right here in our human form. That's why we're here. But you can't do that when you're unconscious and asleep and awake. And that's not a judgment. It's just a fact.
Exactly. And I totally hear what you're saying, because and for me, in the studies that I've had and the experiences that I've had, there are so many, it's a multidimensional experience. There are many worlds, just as, you know, Jesus had said. And I found that in my studies, there was this recognition, maybe you found it too, that in looking at how the document was put together that everybody adheres to, there was a lot of stuff left out in the process, because it was one of the first times in history that church and state were actually bridged in order to manipulate and control people. And we don't necessarily see it as that. And yet that was the purpose that Constantine had with the Council of Nicaea. Now, years later, when the Nag Hammadi scrolls were found, there was a quote that just really resonated with me in what Jesus supposedly said to Thomas, and that, "Don't you know that ye are God as I am God?" Well, wow. And this is kind of the essence of what Jesus was saying the whole time. Everything I can do, you can do. So why are we so resistant to embracing that truth?
Right.
How do you think that in your practice and the people that you work with and in your own life as well, how did that kind of recognition and realization affect your ability to see the patterns that and processes in others that inhibited that awareness and the kinds of hoops they had to jump through in order to get to that new awareness and acceptance that they do have a choice, and that it's ultimately their choice as to how to be in the world?
Yeah, it's a choice when people are presented with other options. So how it's shown up for me and how it in fact impacts my life and the work that I do. I wrote a program called the Curriculum for Conscious Living, and it's actually a curriculum of how people can become more conscious in their life. So how I see it is that we're constantly at this intersection of determining, are we being lived by our human egoic mechanism or by our higher, you know, essence, our connection with God, ego or essence? Mm-hmm. And when people don't recognize that they are kind of a tripart being with body, mind, and spirit, and they're just living in the physical realm, they really don't have any freedom to make a higher choice until they are exposed to kind of new thinking and a new awareness that, hey, what about that part of you that asks that question or that's wondering about those things, and shifting awareness away from the mechanistic nature of the ego stimulus response pattern. I don't like that, therefore I'm angry. They pissed me off, so I'm going to go away. You know, that mechanistic stimulus response, right, wrong, good, bad, very kind of judicial, very human part of ourselves.
Oh, yeah, because we reflect generally whatever energy we perceive is being projected at us. And especially in that aggressive place where we're feeling like we're having to deal with confrontation, right? So we confront back and there's this battle that takes place rather than the pause, reflect, take a breath, then respond from a different place, because you've been able to just let that reactionary effort dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the biggest battle that people have is first within. Mm. Their self-criticism, self-judgment, self-recrimination, and lack of self-love is kind of the foundation. When you walk around with the inner critic and the voice of the ego, you know, kind of holding you back, and it's designed to keep you safe. It's not even a bad thing. The ego is not a bad thing. It needs to be used and harnessed. Just
absolutely.
When it comes to the train, it's sooner or later going to go off the cliff.
So
when people walk around with that inner aggression, there's kind of no other option but then to carry that out, as within, so without.
Absolutely, and make the without as the within, right? Now, in that process, and you mentioned this self-deprecation process that we have, and maybe obsession that we have, especially when we want to perform and we don't feel like we are. In college, I mentioned I had a spiritual awakening. Right after that, my sensitivity just exponentiated. And I was working in the cafeteria, and from work, walking from the cafeteria to the dorm one day, I passed a bunch of students and I heard all of these self-deprecating sayings and just rants that all started with "you." And I'm hearing this as I'm walking by, and not realizing for myself, I'm hearing all of this thinking it's about me, because that's all I'm receiving. I don't have any feedback loop at the time. And it really disturbed me. I locked myself in my dorm room for several days until a friend came by and said, "Hey, wait a minute, where you been?" I said, I told him what happened. He said, "Well, was that your voice or others?" And oh, okay. That gave me some solace in recognizing and yet becoming aware of, oh shit, I don't want to hear people thinking. And yet, so there's these, you know, other advantages and opportunities, sensitivities, gifts that we're given in order to be able to do things. And yet when those things come up in this process, how do you find that with your clients, with your awareness and the process that people go through? Is it a similar thing?
So yeah, a lot of my work is helping people identify the, you know, their inner dialogue. Mm-hmm. One of the primary things that I help people understand is that your thoughts aren't true. Be careful not to believe everything you think. You know, because the ego, the mechanistic nature of the ego is self-protective. So it will always kind of hold you back, find ways of holding you back. And you internalize, you know, kind of these messages from our culture. And when that becomes this inner dialogue, it can be really harsh. So I help people identify what their beliefs are and what their inner dialogue is that's not supporting their growth, their empowerment, their happiness, their well-being. And it's generally a lot. You know, I have a course around money, money vibe mastery, mastering your vibration about money. And all of that stems from people's beliefs and limiting thoughts about scarcity and their, you know, very toxic relationship with money and what it means to them and mm-hmm. how they feel worthy or good enough to actually, you know, make money, charge money, be paid money. You know, we have so much in our lives that's tied up with our self-esteem and our earning.
Having said that, and I, you know, that just resonates, that is a truth. It's obvious for those who have the eyes and ears. And however, in order to find that, you had to go through it yourself. What was that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I went from homeless to multiple seven-figure income. I mean, multiple seven-figure assets from like literally homelessness. it was not pretty. So yeah, you know, went from homeless to then flat broke, but not homeless. And then, you know, at some point, you know, domestic violence, relationships, addiction, depression, PTSD, ADD. I've been diagnosed and medicated with all kinds of things.
You know, the reason I'm laughing is the first psychiatrist I talked to after my experience said, you know, don't worry about it. You've had a spiritual awakening. Don't talk to people. They're not going to understand you. And then I got beat up at frat house the next year in college and ended up in the emergency room. And my parents decided to commit me because they were afraid that I was going to do something to harm myself, which I hadn't. I had no intention to. And yet when I told the same information to this psychiatrist, I got labeled as a manic depressive paranoid schizophrenic and put on 2,000 milligrams of Thorazine a day.
Ooh, ouch. That's a heavy hitter.
I was still up playing ping pong.
Wow.
Shouldn't have been able to, according to what I understand.
Yeah, that's a heavy, heavy med.
Yeah, I should have been a lump in the corner.
It's an antipsychotic.
Right. So it was obvious by, and I know from teaching special ed students years later about how the cocktails are, we don't know. There's no way to determine the effect before giving it. It's the behavior that results afterwards that gives the indicator whether it was the right one or not. Well, that seems kind of silly. And yet applying that 30 years prior to that situation in 1976, they didn't know. Let's just, okay, we, you know, here's the DSM-4, here's the diagnosis, and here's the prescription. Whether it was, you know, so I'm sure that many have experienced those kinds of things and come out of that, some better, some worse. You and I are survivors. We came out of that and became overachievers because of it, right? How did that, in that process of your going through the homelessness, the brokenness, the escalation to where you are now, what were some of the key factors that you found that helped you through that initial process and then catapulted you into the greater aspects of your being?
Yeah, you know, there was many, many steps of this. You know, anybody that tells you they've got the three quick steps to going from A to Z, it, you know, is selling you some snake oil. To me, there are no three quick steps. So the first thing for me was to take full responsibility for the way that my life was and the way my life wasn't. So my financial affairs, my relationships, my addictive behavior, I had to deal with the fact that this was all stemming from me. And that was, you know, that was pretty hard. I was clinically depressed for a long time. I did suffer from PTSD, from, you know, childhood physical abuse, sexual abuse, the death and tragedy early on in my life. There, you know, so I was a hot mess psychologically. So, you know, years of psychotherapy helped me to kind of develop a more holistic self. So I was grateful for that. Medications did help me stabilize enough that I could actually do the work.
Mm-hmm. We often want to avoid those, but the reality is
there was a time I remember I had already become a therapist. So, you know, on the outside, it kind of looked like my life was okay. This was after I was homeless, you know, after being in the domestic violence situation, I went on and became a therapist. And I really, once I kind of had a whole and functional self, being able to start observing it in other people was also a part that helped me solidify that human beings really are so much the same.
Mm-hmm.
That really sent me on a path of wanting to understand more deeply the spiritual and ontological aspects of the human being, apart from the psychology of the human being, but really starting to study metaphysics, starting to study the intersection of science and spirituality, kind of my new love. But back then, you know, so the first thing I had to do was get whole, and that was a lot of psychotherapy. Then as part of that, I also needed to get sober from my addictive thinking and my addictive behavior. So the 12-step programs, I went to several different types of 12-step programs to just deal with how I was accustomed to numbing myself and kind of comforting the ego and all the psychological pain that I experienced through, you know, behaviors and substances that just weren't helpful. So, and I was asleep. You know, you cannot awaken when you're an active substance user. Now, I'm not saying an occasional drink of wine or, you know, a drink over dinner is, you know, oh, you can't awaken if you're doing that. I'm not saying that. But if you have an addictive personality, if you are actively engaged in addictions, you will not be on any path of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to deal with that, with the way that I was using behavior and substances to buffer myself from the reality of life. So as I got sober and, you know, stopped using all these crazy behavior and substances to buffer myself from life, and really then got into my study of metaphysics, you know, the two things that I will point to, external things that I will point to that really, really helped me. One was the Unity Spiritual Movement or New Thought Spiritual Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was the personal development courses at Landmark Education. I did, you know, probably 12 years of personal development courses at Landmark Education. I became a, you know, person who introduces people to their work, an introduction leader at Landmark Education.
Werner had some great material.
It's incredible material. And, yeah, you know, it's continued to evolve over the years. So I'm no longer involved with that organization, but merely because I've got too many other things going on. I did an online course during the pandemic, a couple of them actually, when we were in shutdown. You know, just to kind of buffer myself and strengthen myself, but the
refreshers,
you know,
right?
Yeah. You know, it's good. I was home a lot and it was a great way to connect. So, sure. So I would say, you know, psychotherapy, 12 step, Landmark Education, Unity Church Movement, and then, you know, God and, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. My own resilience, although I don't think I'm smarter or better than anybody else, but I was willing to work harder on myself than just about anybody I knew. At an early point in my recovery, when I was in early recovery, you know, my well-being was almost like a full-time job. I was going to, you know, probably three meetings a week, meeting with my sponsor, going to church, meeting with my minister, going to individual therapy, going to couples therapy. I mean, it was a freaking full-time job getting myself.
You made the choice, it sounds like, that amidst that temptation not to, you had made the choice to be stalwart for you and do whatever was necessary in order to do that. That's a huge step that people aren't often able to make in that process. There's the stops and starts and things, you know, and things like that. My youngest daughter is that way. And it just breaks my heart every, you know, and yet we outside of that situation can't do anything about it until that inner choice and dedication is determined and made. How do you find that in the nature? You mentioned metaphysics and spirituality, and I'm going to make an assumption, correct me if I'm wrong, in your understanding of spirituality is that everything is connected.
That's
just a very base level, and there are so many things that when we ask the right questions, we become more aware of just how interconnected things are, from the thought to the activity in the outer world, depending on how aware we are in that moment. Would you agree?
Oh, 110%.
Okay. So knowing that,
experiences to validate that.
I thought you might have. Now, let's take that a little deeper. What do you think the nature, or what do you sense the nature of our being to be? Because the being, the doing, and the having are the three, you know, that trifecta in life. And we often put the doing before the being. In the beingness, what is that core place that we all have that we often sublimate?
Yeah. So I like to use the word God as a verb. And I say that we are here Godding on earth.
All right.
So that core thing that we all have is to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that we are the created, but we are also the creator. That we
if we're sons and daughters, what the heck are we when we grow up?
Right.
I mean, that's the simple, obvious realization there, and yet we miss it.
Yeah, we do miss it. So I am constantly creating my experience and co-creating my experience through the energy, you know, my ability to use my mind to train my brain to connect with life at whatever level I want to experience it. So the kind of fundamental truth that we subjugate is that we are God. Mm-hmm. We are you and I right here, right now, this technology, this topic, the people watching this, this is God expressing in the human plane. And when people embrace that truth, that Christ consciousness, that, you know, this is one of my favorites, Christ was not Jesus's last name. It was right. Jesus the Christ. And we all have that Christ essence, Christ consciousness within us.
And that's the embodiment of it, right? The cosmic consciousness is embodied through the Christ consciousness, because that's the physical form of it.
That is the physical form of it, right? Christ, Jesus took physical form as the Christ consciousness, and so that we could have that experience and embody cosmic consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking that thought and that bit of knowledge from concept to application. And actually one of the fifth unity principle, the five unity principles, the fifth of the five unity principles is, it is not enough to know the truth. You must demonstrate truth principle in your life. And that's how, you know, a lot of my clients sometimes will be like, yeah, Jackie, I know this. And just yesterday I said this to a client, said, hey, you know, I don't mean to be obnoxious and I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, but you don't know this. You have an intellectual understanding of it. But until you are consistently demonstrating this truth of who you are, the truth of your Christ essence, she was upset that a girlfriend had said X and, you know, really upset her. And you know, and her ego got engaged.
Bruised.
At some point, you won't have an ego that's going to respond like that. She said, I know, I've tried just to like let it go. And so what am I supposed to do? Just let people like, you know, say things that hurt me and I act like it doesn't matter? And I said, no, at some point people will say things and it won't hurt you. When you don't have much of an ego, or when you are harnessing your ego through your higher essence, you're using your ego. Mm-hmm. Shit doesn't bother
you. And do you recommend that in that process, when you hear something from someone, that you become vulnerable enough to say, you know, I don't know if you intended this or not, but what you said just really seemed like you were trying to hurt me. Was that your intention?
You know, again,
Zen, and those kinds of things.
At a certain level of consciousness, yes, that is a very apt, profound, and important way to communicate. And I guess I'm going at even a higher level of consciousness. At transcendent consciousness, you literally see what's happening. You see the barb, right?
Right.
The singer, the person.
Yeah, and you're not attached to it.
And it's just like, wow, you know, there's that human being having that experience. And there's me, like, noticing that experience without any emotional connectivity, attachment, or reaction to it. It's like, wow, there they are doing what they do.
Sure.
Now that is a very, that's like Christ level consciousness, very high level consciousness.
And what I was talking about or alluding to was the series of boundaries that we have to set. And that one of the ways of doing that is just to acknowledging what's present, how we feel, how we sense, how we're perceiving it, and getting that conversation going that we often avoid because we're afraid of being vulnerable and sharing how we feel, or at least, and especially for men. We're taught not to do that.
Sure.
And now this next, you know, phase of becoming seems to be bringing out that, you know, guys have a feminine nature too, and we need to acknowledge and nurture that.
Sure. Yeah. Again, at a certain level of consciousness, you feel vulnerability in sharing how you feel. And as you continue to grow and evolve in consciousness, there's no sense of vulnerability because there's no ego to be defended or hurt.
Right. That's the imperturbability aspect of it.
Yeah. But yes, you know, for men, you know, watching men awaken, watching women awaken to their power, watching men awaken to their kind of their soft sovereignty of being able to bring in nurturance and care and love and compassion, and watching women stand for, you know, kind of strength and autonomy and empowerment. It's a beautiful, I'm very in touch with my male side. So I feel very blessed. I was kind of born that way. I was always a tomboy, always, you know, kind of rough around the edges. And
my wife's the same way. And I love that about her.
Yeah. It's a nice integration of the male and female energies.
It really is. Now, do you also notice that in this experience, it's the direct experience of the process. And there's specifics in that process, right? There's the data points and the localized experiences that are direct experiences that give you that expression of being able to convert the knowledge to the demonstration of, right?
I didn't follow that.
Okay, so in this internal process that you have a direct experience of throughout the course of the process, from the homelessness to where you're at now, let's say, right? It's a direct experience that same kind of thing. It's really hard to articulate that and sharing it to another as some kind of a knowledge base, although it does work to at least give some indicators as to the breadcrumbs that they may find along the journey. But at the same time, it's their own direct experience that you then can see because of how they are behaving that gives you that sense of, oh, they're getting it, right? Mm. You can see that result, those changes. And when you're in that process, it's sometimes so incremental that you don't really notice it until later on when you can look back and go, wow. Did I just do that?
Right. Mm.
And if you're fortunate enough to have someone there to observe your own process and pat you on the back for it, that is just amazing as far as how that can bolster the continuance of it and the willingness to turn around and then share that process or to try to help others to do so. Because I think, and let me ask you this, do you think at the core level that we're actually set up as service-oriented? You know, you have the service to self and service to others. So there's two, you know, law of one kind of stuff, right? And yet it seems to be that the ultimate service to self is the service to others, because that's when everybody wins. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of process that you see happening with your with your coursework, with your therapy, and with yourself?
Yeah, it's definitely the process that I see in my work, and people who are drawn to me. I say I'm an activator. So mm-hmm. people who are drawn to my courses or to work with me individually as a coach very much are ready to step into that service orientation and live their lives at a higher level of service. But I honestly am not sure I think everybody is. I think it depends on where a soul enters this lifetime in their own conscious evolution. Sure. A mentor years ago, his name was Wally Minto, and he said to me, Jackie, some of us are born in this world to ride the rides, and some of us are born to work the rides. You, my friend, were born a worker. And I was like, damn, you know, why couldn't I have been born a rider, you know? And right. And I think he's right. Some people enter this life just to ride the rides at the carnival, and they're just riding the rides, man, and let somebody mm-hmm. else work and put in the time, and that's fine. But, you know, I think more and more today, because of where we are in the evolution of humanity, I think more people are awakening to be the workers, to do the work, to serve humanity at higher and higher levels.
Mm-hmm. And also, as you say, that as we learn this, there's no need for, we're not evangelical, right? Everybody doesn't have to get it.
Yeah,
right. That's not necessary, right? Yeah. And to feel that is kind of a disservice to ourselves, because it creates the frustration of them not getting it and us wanting to push on it. Well, there is no push or pull in this kind of operation. It's flow. And as long as we're able to pay attention to that and ask the right questions, perceive what the answers are when they do arrive and not miss them, right? Because a lot of times they just fly right past. We go, wait a minute. And in that experience, do you feel that there is this underlying essence that is drawing those who are on the self-awareness path into positions, into places, toward other people to create a larger organic system as we're evolving as a planetary society?
I certainly hope so.
Do you see any evidence of that so far?
Sure. I mean, there are tons of organizations that are committing to raising consciousness on the planet. And I'm, you know, I have a coaching client right now who's working with the United Nations around sustainability. There's tons of organizations and places that people are awakening to our oneness mm-hmm. with humanity and oneness of this planet. If we don't start caring for Mother Earth, we're not going to have, are we on a race to extinction? You know, that's a very vital and viable question for sure. us to pursue. And, you know, that's where free will comes in. We have a choice. We are either evolving or devolving. And I think, you know, these last, you know, 8-10 years has been kind of a questionable time of which direction we're going to go in. But right. sometimes, you know, things have to fall apart before they get rebuilt. And I think we're seeing some of that, and who knows how far it's going to go.
Sure.
But, you know, I really admire people who are futures thinkers and who really look toward the evolution of not just consciousness in the humans, but the evolution of the consciousness of the planet and the universe itself. Mm-hmm.
Now, in the references of the New World Order, right, that kind of has this mixed bag of emotions along with it. And yet, we discussed earlier, the awakening I had, it was termed that there would be this facilitation of a New World Order. And to me, the essence of that was harmony among people and planet. And that's kind of where we're headed to, and that those operational capacities are built in to us as we acquiesce to them in this growth in self-awareness and awareness of others and the connectedness that we have to the planet, because she is conscious too, on only a different level that we could even imagine, because we can't slow down enough to actually perceive it.
Yes.
Our minds are too quick in our, what is it, 70,000 thoughts a day?
Yes.
You know,
that's right. 80% of them in the lower realm of negativity.
Right. And yet, so in this quiet space where we have less thoughts, that we have this question of how do I connect better? How do you see that? And what kind of processes do you have in place that assist that? And part of this question comes from, you know, my leadership role with Live and Let Live as executive director. It's a global peace movement. Well, how do we establish global peace in order to have freedom and then harmony? Which is, harmony is not necessarily bliss. It's the management of the patterns and of what we think is chaos that we haven't really questioned enough to figure out what it really is. And do you see this part of what you're bringing to the world as helping to facilitate that? And how can we figure out a way to work together better, which is the ultimate, in order to bring this forth at a greater level?
Yeah. So I help people in organizations understand that they have a purpose and that their purpose is to grow in consciousness, to live less in the realm of fear and anxiety, worry, stress, upset, jealousy, resentment, anger, and apathy and resignation, and to move their day-to-day, minute-to-minute experience into the higher realms. You know, first, just can you get to neutral? Can you get to,
can you just put it on pause?
To get to a neutral place in your consciousness where not everything is kind of this in this lower realm. And you know, neuroscience does show us that most people's thoughts are in this lower realm of judgment and criticism and angst and worry and fear. So if you can just get to kind of neutral, then we can start working on the higher levels of consciousness, like, you know, peace and equanimity and love and, you know, unconditional acceptance and, you know, some of these higher, you know, to me, the only world order, when there's new world order, old world order, the only world order is love. So when we can get humanity to actually resonate and function and think and operate at the level of love. So
That's truly new because the current world order is based on the very things that you just exposed as the programming, the manipulation, the management, you know, like Howard Bloom wrote in the Lucifer Principle that, you know, few people have manipulated masses and entire populations by telling lies over and over again through a controlled media stream, whether it be a town crier or the internet. And people are gullible enough to want to believe that. And so they accept that as truth over time, even though it may not feel like it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
How do we move that sense, that feeling of, oh, this doesn't quite feel right, how do we address that and bring that awareness into a conversation?
Awareness that things don't feel right and bring that into a conversation? Is that what you're asking me?
Right, because it seems that we have this innate sense, right, from a gut level of whether things resonate or don't resonate, kind of like the Taoist philosophy is it desirable or undesirable, right? And that has a sensation along with it that we often brush past in order for the ego to be gratified in some way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think, again, it all begins with self-awareness. If people are able to connect and resonate and like, oh, that really resonates with me, or, oh no, that doesn't really resonate with me. Then secondly, you have to be judicious in how you bring that into conversation, because not every conversation is ready to be had. Mm. So I don't know, this is giving this example certainly reveals my political leaning, but I'll use it anyway.
All right.
I was
we'll forgive you ahead of time, the nice Catholic girl that you are.
Yes. So I was at a conference last year where former President Trump was was the keynote speaker, and he was not announced as the keynote speaker. And it was a surprise, but then kind of people knew because Secret Service, well, whatever, but it wasn't announced ahead of time. I bought the tickets.
Loose lips.
Traveled to Florida and I was there. And I was not a supporter of the former president. I am not a supporter of a former President Trump. Does not align with my values. His behavior, his speech, his rhetoric does not align with my values.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting in this auditorium, having paid decent money to be there and traveled, and you know, and I am very, one of my fundamental principles is I only use my resources in alignment with what I value. So not only am I there having spent my resources of time, money, and energy and love being at this event, not knowing that this person was going to be there, but then I also found I was in an auditorium full of people that were on their feet cheering. And I sat in my chair and cried. I literally, and I'm not much of a crier. It takes a lot to bring tears to my eyes. But I was just devastated to see that I had been involved in this community of people that I had no idea that their values were so misaligned with my values. It was a business-oriented kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, we were talking a lot about business and it was interesting and compelling. And so the lady sitting next to me, you know, kind of, we had chatted a bit. And so she sat down and she said, "What's happening for you?" And I said, "Well, this is really hard for me because I really care about spending my resources in alignment with my values. And this is so not who and what I value. I don't want to be here. I don't." And she said, "Well," and we went on to have this extraordinary conversation. And she was very much, you know, kind of right, what one might consider a right-wing MAGA proponent. And what we both came to was that, you know, she feels that she was a product of the mainstream media that she was consuming, and I was a product of the mainstream media that I was consuming. While I don't think that was true in the simplest form, because I spend a lot of time studying and reading philosophy and politics, and you know,
you're much more aware of your
consciousness. Yes, exactly. I don't kind of take things at face value, but it got us to a point where she was incredibly supportive and really starting to debunk her thinking in a way that was really useful. So that was a place where there was an opening for a conversation. If I, you know, found myself in the middle of a political rally that wasn't in alignment with my political views, that might not be a place where, you know, with a different person or a different vibe. So, you know, maybe at Thanksgiving dinner with Uncle Joe, who's got his MAGA hat on, that's, you know, that might not be a place that there's an opening for conversation. So I think people who are awakening need to have a sensitivity to where is there an opening for conversation? And then, you know, for people like yourself, Zen, or forming organizations, where can you begin forcing, if you will, or creating the conversation?
Yeah, it's nothing. We can't force. From my experience, you have to wait for the opportunity. You request it. It's where you put your attention, intention, and interaction. And the wait for, like your opportunity, right? You had no idea what was going to happen, yet you, for whatever reason, unbeknownst to you, were there with the opportunity. You experienced your vulnerability and you went to that place of just how you felt about what was happening. And then because of that, the person next to you, which may have been the whole purpose for you being there, right, began the conversation and it deepened and you got to a place where your deep sense of connectedness affected her in some way. And she began questioning what you know. So those kinds of things, even though we don't realize they're happening in the moment because they're often excruciatingly fun, right? That's how I use that term, because it is. It's excruciating in the process. And then after you look back and go, wow, that was actually, should have been pretty fun, because you see where it was and what happened. And there's this boost in recognition that your service was Excellent. I was looking for an adjective to throw in there.
It was a lovely experience. I mean, it was a difficult experience, but I was really glad that I had it.
Absolutely.
Affirm and validate my values, my sense of self. I got to be in conversation with lots of, really good people who we have very different views and value systems. And that was how I kept talking about it.
Sure. And as you said earlier, how do you know when you've got it? You demonstrated it, and you got the feedback through that open and honest conversation.
Yeah, no, it was really great.
And connection. That's awesome. So I know we're kind of close on time. You've got a hard stop coming up.
I need to wrap up. Yeah.
Yeah. What if you could give some practical advice, and as you said before, there's no three-step quick process to this.
I love practical advice.
Yeah. What's your most practical advice for people who are striving to become question our lives and grow and find that next experience in their life and that is leading them toward their great being?
I think my most practical advice is very, very simple. Have a daily practice of some kind of introspective. I call mine quiet time. So every morning I have an hour and a half. It doesn't have to be that long. It can be 10, 15 minutes of quiet time where you either read inspirational material or you pray or you meditate or you write a gratitude list or you do yoga or you do all of these things, but some kind of space in your life where journaling is another one. Mm-hmm. I journal my prayers. I write my prayers. Have a dialogue with God in my journal. It's extraordinary. I love it. So have some kind of dedicated daily inner time. Without that, it will be very, very difficult, if not nearly impossible, to live an empowered and awakened life.
Start your day off with the attention on your best self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And wanting to become present. Awesome.
When I wake up every morning, I put my hand on my heart and I breathe in love from the universe and breathe out love back to the universe just for a minute or two. It's how I begin my day. And then I move into my quiet time experience for about an hour, hour and a half every day.
You set the stage.
Yeah, right? No. Totally.
Whether you do it in
and then every moment from there on, sure. I seek to make my life a living prayer. Through how I think, how I express myself, what actions I choose, how I spend my resources, make my life a living prayer. So my quiet time sets the stage, but it's how I live my life that becomes my spiritual practice.
Mm. As it is for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Demonstration of whether we're tuning into ourselves and practicing or not.
Exactly right. Zen, thank you so much for having me on your show. This has been really just delightful to be with you and to get to know you more. And I look forward to our next time around.
Oh, I do too, Jackie. And thank you very much. And namaste and in La Ketch. Thanks for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I'll see you next time.